Welcome to the Disciple Making Leader Podcast, your resource for exploring the world of disciple making and leadership within the church. Discover Jesus' strategy for raising up leaders, growing the church, and multiplying a movement. Let's jump into today's episode and explore the power of a disciple making leader.
Well, welcome to the Disciple Making Leader Podcast. It is a real pleasure to be here today. I'm so excited to spend a little bit of time with one of my favorite people in the world, talking about something we love talking about. But my name is Glenn Underhill. I am the pastor at pastor of spiritual development at Cross Creek Church in Colleyville, Texas. And I'm going to be serving as your host today. And I have with me in studio a good friend of mine, Mr. Craig Etheridge. Craig, why don't you take just a moment, introduce yourself as we get ready to start.
All right, brother. I see you're drinking a little tangerine Topo Chico there.
I am. I'm following in your footsteps.
I didn't bring one with me today.
Student will be like his teacher.
That's right. That should be another podcast.
It should be. There we go. Yes.
But Craig Etheridge here, pastor at Cross Creek Church, and we at Disciple First are just doing these podcasts to encourage pastors in making disciples who make disciples and creating a movement of multiplication. And we're super excited, Glenn, to be here with you and talking about the things that we're passionate about.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why we partner with Disciple First, is because we feel like, man, what a better organization to be a part of and to help, because it really is working to empower the local church to make and multiply disciples like Jesus, which is really what we're spending a lot of time even today talking about.
Absolutely.
But this idea, this core conviction of that Jesus is our model for life and for ministry. And so, so much of what we're going to be talking about in today's podcast is in relationship to that. I know over the last couple podcasts, we've been having a conversation, you know, oftentimes when we're working with churches in this idea of making disciples who make disciples, everybody wants us to talk about the how,
right?
How do we put these things together? How do we organize this? How do we develop structure? How do we create disciple? I mean, it's always how. And what we have found over the years, not only in our own experience, but then as we've been working with leaders coming back and going, really, I don't know that I understand the why.
Yeah.
And that's really what some of this was born out of, was this idea of, hey, let's go back to why we do this so that when we work on the how, there's really a solid foundation. Yeah. So we spent one podcast talking about this idea, having a Jesus-centric philosophy of ministry. So in just a little bit, can you just kind of give us a real quick rundown for those maybe who maybe have missed those others, or you know, just kind of giving setting that up for them?
Yeah, absolutely. And I just, before I kind of dive into the definition, just kind of restating what you just said so well, is that man, the first part of our ministry, you and I, it was all banging out the how, right? I mean, we really worked on the how. But we found out that if we focus there, or if we start there, then a lot of people, they go, okay, well, you know, that's nice for you that you do it that way, or that's interesting that Jesus did it that way. But they really don't have the why. They don't have the fire in the belly that says, we've got to do this. Right. And it's because what they're missing is the why, the deep why. And so we saw that in our own ministry and with other pastors and leaders. And so we said, hey, we need to lean in on this idea of a Jesus-centric philosophy of ministry. So when you think of philosophy of ministry, it's really about the why. It's about why you do what you do, and what is it that truly drives your ministry. Doctrinal statements are good for doctrinal boundaries. Mission statements are good for the purpose of your church. Core values are a great framework for your organizational culture. But philosophy of ministry is deeper than that. And it really says, okay, what is it that is really driving your decisions? And quite honestly, I think probably for you and for me, or maybe I can just speak for myself, early on in my ministry, I think my philosophy of ministry was just shaped by whatever was popular.
Right.
You know, whoever was the latest, greatest church out there and what they were doing. And so we thought, well, we're just going to do what they do, you know? And so we kind of adopted their philosophies of ministry because it worked. And I think a lot of people are like that. They don't really even have a have really defined what is it that drives their ministry. But when we say a Jesus center, what we're really saying is we study the life of Christ and what is it that drove Jesus, and we want those same things to drive our ministry.
Yeah, which really hammers down on what we're going to talk about today, because from that philosophy of ministry comes a set of core convictions.
Yep.
Disciple-making convictions. And really, we've surfaced seven core convictions of a disciple-making church. Yep. that kind of come out of this whole idea of a Jesus-centric philosophy of ministry. And if you even think about this, I mean, Jesus was, in a sense, pouring into his team, his ministry team, this philosophy of ministry, because then they just went and replicated what they saw Jesus do, because that's what you just said. We did the same thing. We just took what we were doing in other places.
Right.
Even though we didn't even realize we had a philosophy of ministry, maybe we did, but it was just about what we had seen before. But then, you know, hey, they come with Jesus and it changes their life, and he shapes a very different philosophy of ministry, which I think the church in North America needs desperately.
Absolutely.
A Jesus-centered philosophy of ministry.
You know, and Jesus' philosophy of ministry is very different than the current religious leaders of his day,
right,
which we talked about in a previous podcast, but very different from them. And you're right, they just kind of absorbed it. They watched him live these convictions out, and then they replicate those in the book of Acts. You see them replicating, and then Paul says, follow me as I follow Jesus. Right. What was he saying? Not just following Jesus in a salvific way, but following Jesus in how he did his ministry.
Right.
And so, so there's a lot to think about. And I just think, you know, early on, no one ever said, hey, Craig, you should be articulating your philosophy of ministry. But, you know, now that we've lived a few days, haven't we, Glenn, where we've been in, we got some battle scars, and now I'm really realizing how vitally important that really is. And to crystallize it and that it's rooted in the life of Jesus will really help you use those convictions to inform how you do ministry in your church.
So with that in mind, let's think about this question then first. Why would it be important to have a set of core convictions born out of your philosophy of ministry? What value add does that bring? What benefit? What does it do for a pastor or for some key leaders, elders, whatever that might be in your particular setting, that would most be beneficial for having a set of deep-rooted core convictions?
Yeah. Well, we talked a little bit about what a philosophy of ministry does for you, you know, common identity, belief, cooperation, so on. But the core convictions really begin to even flesh that out even more. And these seven core convictions that we're going to talk about right now, they really become the rudder that drives your ministry. So these things are going to be prioritized. When you just look at your church, these things are going to be the important things, the priorities that are going to drive your ministry forward. They're also going to be a great evaluative tool as to whether you are on course. Mm. You know, I'm reading a book right now called The Wager, and it's about this ship that left England and is going down through the Horn of around South America. And they talked about how they didn't have sonar and they didn't have satellite, all the things that we have, and that they would just do their best to try to stay on course, but they would always drift way off course. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times that can happen in ministry. You know, if you don't have your bearings, right, you know, and some things that we're really committed to, then you can easily, you know, through the winds of whatever's popular, can drive you way off course. And you look at them and go, wow, how do we get over here? What are we really producing? So to me, these core convictions are a way to make sure you're on course, that these are the top priorities, and that you evaluate them through your kids' ministry, your student ministry, your adult ministry, worship ministry, your whole church. Are these things being reflected, and are they a priority in your ministry?
Yeah, and I think they would also, too, and I don't know how you feel about this, but they'd also probably help in even making critical decisions, because we can look at something and go, well, maybe we shouldn't be doing that because it doesn't come into alignment to these core convictions of who we say we are and what we believe we need to be doing.
Yeah, it's so important. Yeah, how you know to say yes to something and no to something else.
Yeah, really good. Yeah. So let's tackle these seven core convictions. We're going to take each one in our podcast. So let's start with the first one. And the first one is that Jesus' way is the best way. Yeah. Jesus' way is the best way. So what are you saying there? And what are you trying to communicate in a lot of that being a core conviction?
Yeah. You know, this may be the main one that kind of feeds the other ones, really. Because if you don't believe this, then the other ones may be up for grabs. Because we're saying Jesus' way is the best way. Jesus had a way of doing ministry. And his way of doing ministry is the best way to do it. Right? That's what I mean. Jesus had a way of doing ministry, and the way that he did ministry is the best way to do it. We're told in 1 John 2:6 to walk as Jesus walked. We're told in Philippians 2:5 that we're to think like Jesus, John 14:12 to act like Jesus, to follow his example, 1 Peter 2:21. So Jesus said he's given us an example that we're to follow. And when you begin to say the life of Jesus, you and I did this together the very first time we did it. Mm-hmm. And we started realizing that the more we studied the life of Jesus chronologically, we could begin to see emerging out of that a pattern and a way and a methodology and a strategy that Jesus used. Right. And we can't argue with the fact that it was highly successful, right? I mean, just within a short period of time, you know, 20-something years, you know, the gospel is bearing fruit all over the world. And so Jesus had a way of developing leaders. He had a way of multiplying. He had a way of training his leaders. And what we're saying is that pattern is the best way to do ministry. Now, some people might argue and say, well, you know, but we got all the technology now. You know, we got all this stuff, all these technology. We got all these things that, you know, we live in a different culture. We live in a different way. We have to be more modern, more sophisticated. And yes, we are living in a different culture, but the fundamental principles of Jesus produce the results of Jesus. Mm-hmm. You know, the way Jesus did ministry produces the results of his ministry. Mm-hmm. And if we can look out and say, man, we got all this technology and all these great things, but what are we really producing? We're producing church attenders, or are we producing multiplying disciples? Right. And if you want multiplying disciples, which I believe that's what Jesus wants, then we've got to get back to his way.
Yeah. And it really is so critically important, because it does, this core conviction does even drive some of the things on our scorecard.
Yeah.
Right? Because sometimes we count things that we think that really matter, but do those things necessarily really matter in Jesus's economy for the church? And I think, unfortunately, one of the areas that we have stopped asking as a church, because we've lost sight of this kind of key core conviction, is what kind of disciples are we really producing?
Right.
And does it look like the kind of disciple that Jesus was producing his end product?
I mean, Glenn, let's be honest. You know, most of the time when people talk about churches and their church is very successful, it has to do with how many people attend on Sunday, and you know how many followers you have on your church, you know, site, and that type of thing. And I'm not negating those things. I mean, those things are important, but that is, Jesus had a different scorecard. Mm-hmm. You know, when we look at Matthew 28, he said, "Go and make disciples of all nations," mm-hmm. and not only those that would be baptized, that would then multiply. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that would really live as Jesus lived. And we're woefully deficient on that. I'm just talking in broad brush. We're woefully deficient in seeing churches producing people with life change that are investing their life in the kingdom and multiplying their life into a movement. And we are seeing that some overseas, right? We're seeing pockets of these movements of multiplication, but we're not seeing them in North America. And so we need to get back to that. And I think a lot of that is because we've kind of drifted off course a little bit from these core convictions. So this first conviction, Jesus had a way of doing ministry. So you might, if you're saying, what was that way? Well, then you got to back up and really study the life of Christ. And some of that's for another podcast, and some of it we'll even touch on here a little bit. But following Jesus' way is where we begin.
Yeah. Jesus' way is the best way. That's the first core conviction.
Not the easy way, by the way.
Not the easy way, for sure.
Maybe not even the most popular way.
No.
But it is the best way.
It is the best way. Yeah, that's really good. Second core conviction, the Great Commission is about making disciples.
Yeah, so the Great Commission, you know, when we talk to pastors many times, I'll say, they say, well, I'm all about the Great Commission, you know, and we do evangelism, we tell people about Christ, and that's great. That's the first part, right? You have to come to know Jesus. But what Jesus is really driving toward to make disciples is the divine imperative of the Great Commission. It is the central focus. It's a key verb in that command to go make disciples of all nations. And so defining what a disciple is, taking that very seriously, saying, are we making disciples? Evaluating your ministries to see, are we producing disciples according to some kind of definition is critical if you're going to take this seriously. And Glenn, I mean, you talk to pastors all the time. You're coaching all the time. We're going and training. When you ask them, what is a disciple, what kind of feedback do you normally get? Is that it? Radio silence?
Radio silence.
I mean, that's the truth.
Dramatic
pause.
That's
the truth. they might itch out a few words that sound, you know, something like a follower. And right. There are pieces of that, or a learner, right? You know, right. That's the million-dollar piece is that, and so if this is a core conviction, then wouldn't it make sense that we can clearly define that, pinpoint it, target it, and say we are replicating what Jesus had in mind as a true, authentic disciple that really is doing kingdom work. So then not only does this core conviction lean into that, but it also then fleshes out even how you strategically do ministry.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, there's so many implications behind these two, but that unfortunately is why, you know, I think again, we've lost our way is because we can't really truly define what a disciple is. And if we as a leader in our leadership base doesn't know we all have varying ideas, then Houston, we have a problem because then everybody's kind of going in their own direction. And
that's right.
And I remember that being the case for me early in my student ministry days and realizing, oh, no wonder we're kind of all going in different directions and aiming for different things. We have a different conviction of what that looks like and helping my ministry team come to a more clear, concrete, crystal clear concrete of a definition of what a disciple is.
Yeah.
And so that was really huge. And if anybody would love to have some conversations with us offline, we'd love to just kind of share a little bit of what our definition of it is, what we believe a biblical definition that Jesus really was looking for as a disciple.
Absolutely. So just the conviction that we are about making disciples, that is the end goal, that is the end product of our church. We're not just about providing religious goods and services. We're actually trying to produce something. Mm-hmm. And are we taking that seriously? Have we got a definition? Are we evaluating people based on that definition? And we're not just saying that people have to be perfect, right? Because we know that even the Apostle Paul in Philippians, you know, one of the later books that he wrote, he said, not that I've accomplished it yet, I'm still pressing forward, right? So it's not like he's perfect. But we can say there are some fundamental basic elements to a mature disciple that we should be able to recognize in a person. And so if you don't have that definition, then how in the world can you know if you're making a disciple or not?
Right.
And the real question, are you even taking that very seriously? And so that the second conviction is, man, the Great Commission is about making disciples. We have to have a definition. We have to know what our end product is. And we're putting that as a top priority.
Yeah. So good. So the third core conviction is the gospel centers on King Jesus.
Yeah, and this is nothing new. I think probably everyone that's listening to us would understand that, but just the fact that the gospel is an announcement of good news. That's what the Greek word means, and the good news is that the king has come to save his people. You see this kingly language all the way through. There's a coming king. You know, all the Old Testament's talking about the king is coming, the king is coming, the king is coming. All the prophecy is talking about that. And then you have the saving king when Jesus shows up, and that coming king is now realized in the birth of Christ. And there's all this kingly language about his birth, and he will come to save his people from their sins, the angel to Mary, the angel to Joseph. It's just all the way through the Gospels there. And then, of course, culminating in the cross, in him giving his life for us, and then his death, burial, resurrection, and then what we call the reigning king, that he is now, he's ascended to the right hand. He is now reigning and ruling in heaven now, and he is one day going to come and reign and rule on the earth, you know. And so there's this reigning king. So just this idea that the gospel is really all about Jesus. It's all about King Jesus, the king that was promised, the king that is coming, the king that is saving, that has saved us, and the king that is coming again to rule and to reign. And that we're calling people through the gospel to repent from their sins and to place their faith in this King Jesus. Amen. And the gospel you preach is very important. It's not just that Jesus wants to be your forever friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I literally had lunch with a guy today, and we're talking about, you know, sometimes we share the gospel with kids, like, well, do you want Jesus to be your forever friend? Yeah, okay, let's go get baptized. Right. And that's not the gospel. You know, the gospel is who Jesus is, what he has done, and our repentance from our sin and following Jesus. And again, that has disciple-making importance, right? Because King Jesus means he's in charge.
Yep.
King Jesus means I'm devoted to him and following him and submitting my life to him, which is all about what a disciple is.
Yeah. 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 So in a sense, everything centers on Jesus.
Yes.
Fundamentally. Yeah. So great conversation, man. These conversations are so good, and I'm looking forward to even more conversation. But before we do that, let's take a quick break. And then we'll come back and we'll have some more conversations on these last four key convictions.
Ministry can be lonely. Now more than ever, pastors are feeling the pressure of raising expectations among their members. Pastors are expected to be stellar preachers, effective evangelists, thoughtful counselors, courageous change agents, astute business managers, all the while steering the church to accomplish its mission. And all of this can be overwhelming at times. Wouldn't it be great to have someone in your corner, someone who understands what you're facing and can help you make the wise decisions that lead the church to make disciples of all nations? Disciple First is here to help. We can provide you with personalized coaching that will help you develop and sustain a healthy movement of multiplying disciples. Our coaching includes a free evaluation to identify your church's health and your current sticking points. Also, a roadmap for sustained health and a team of proven leaders that will give you customized counsel to help you move forward. Listen, you don't have to be alone in ministry. Let's start talking today. For more information and a free ministry evaluation, go to disciplefirst.com/coaching. That's disciplefirst.com/coaching.
All right. Well, welcome back. And man, we've just been talking through these seven core convictions that come out of a Jesus-centric philosophy of ministry. The first one we looked at today was that Jesus' way is the best way. The Great Commission, number two, is about making disciples. We talked about the gospel centers around King Jesus. But this fourth key core conviction is really important as well. So this idea that its spirit dependence is vital.
Yeah, spirit dependence. Just when you study the life of Jesus, you just cannot get away from the way that Jesus is completely dependent on the Spirit to empower him, to lead him, to encourage him. We see this all the way through Jesus pulling away for prayer to receive comfort and clarity, encouragement through the Spirit. In his humanity, Jesus was dependent on the Spirit just as we are today. And so as you look through the book of Acts, you also see the disciples of Jesus living as Jesus lived, you know, constantly dependent on the Holy Spirit for his help. And this is why Jesus said, you know, I'm going to give you this helper, and he's going to come alongside you, and he's going to help you, just as I was, another counselor, another comforter, just like myself. And so this just reminds us that the work of Jesus can only be done through prayerful dependence on the Spirit. And I think the more you try to invest in people, you are confronted with that reality. I can't change another person. You know, no matter how much I want them to walk with God, no matter how much I want them to grow in their faith or serve or do whatever they're going to do, or just want them to really be a genuine disciple, I can't do that. I mean, I can meet with them, I can encourage them, I can live an example, but Glenn, you and I have had multiple cases where, man, somebody just didn't want to walk that road.
Right.
And I can't do that, but the Spirit of God does it. And how cool it is when you're investing in someone, and you just see the light bulbs come on, and you see real life change, and you just know I'm getting a front row seat to the work of the Holy Spirit in this person's life. And so this is a core conviction because it was so important in the life of Jesus, but it's so important to us. We have to ask ourselves, are we dependent on the Spirit? Mm. As we are navigating the waters of leadership, as we are ministering through our church, as we are pouring out in the community, as we're multiplying our church, as we're doing the things that we do, are we really dependent on the Spirit? Are we just giving lip service to that? Mm-hmm. You know, are we really dependent? And God just continually brings me back to this of times when I don't feel like I'm as dependent as I need to be, quite being really honest, and then just a conviction that, Craig, you got to get on your knees, and just only the Spirit of God can do this. And so it's just a great reminder to be dependent on the Spirit as you're doing the work.
This fifth core conviction now is that people grow best on a pathway.
Yeah. This really comes out of the whole study of the life of Christ. You know, when you look at the Great Commission, Jesus talks about go, you know, baptize, teaching them to observe all I've commanded you, and behold, I'm with you to the end of the age. And that really is a little bit of a thumbnail sketch of the phases that Jesus took his disciples through. And as we study the life of Christ, we realize that there are four key phases. Jesus engaged spiritual explorers. First 18 months of Jesus' ministry was all about engaging spiritual explorers, helping them understand the claims of Christ and answering spiritual questions. And then he pivots to another phase where he's connecting these believers together. They're connecting with him, connecting with each other, connecting with the cause. And then that's about 6 months. And the next 6 months, he's growing these disciples and training them. This is the high equipping phase, training phase, where he's really developing these men. And this is where he calls the 12 to him. That doesn't happen until after 2 years into his ministry that he identifies the 12. And he is just pouring in, he's growing these men to take leadership in the future. And then the last phase is a multiplying phase where Jesus multiplies the 12 into 72, and then those began to multiply to the fourth generation, and Jesus is filled with joy in Luke 10:21 because he sees the movement going. And this is why Jesus at the end of his life can pray in John 17, you know, I've accomplished the work you sent me to do. That's before the cross. And this work of creating a movement of multiplication is already afoot. It's already beginning. Can't be stopped. And so just when you study the life of Christ like that, you realize these phases are how Jesus took, you know, irreligious people and moved them all the way through to being multiplying disciples. And what we're saying is that everybody grows best on this pathway.
Yeah.
And as you are famous for saying, Glenn, I give you all the credit. I don't know if you came up with it or not, but I'm giving you all the credit, is that most of the time in churches we offer a map. I mean, we offer a menu. Here's all the things we can do, but we really need to be offering a map. And we need, you know, a lot of churches, here's a la carte, here you pick the ministries you want, but we're really saying, here's where you are, and here's the spiritual pathway to get you where you need to be. And that's really this is your core work.
Yeah.
And so what do you think is the greatest challenge in getting people down a pathway like that?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, being because it is a conviction that we have, even as, you know, as my team sits around and we evaluate what we're doing in light of that, you know, my job is to really help to remind our team the absolute necessity of why we do what right. we're doing. And then if something isn't working, does it need to be just removed completely? Is it, you know, or does it need to be retooled? Because I think sometimes that is where or do we need to continue to just throw more emphasis, more energy behind it, because we are really seeing that it's helping to right. move people down that way. And I think sometimes when we just have a bunch of crowds and everything we do is a crowd orientation, it's hard to see how people really are moving along the process. And as you were talking, it made me think about, just think about this, Jesus, though there were, you know, people hanging out on the fringe, he started with five, and that five turned to a few more that we know were starting to build and be a part of that. But then he pulls back and he then selects 12 at some point, and then that 12 turns into 72, and then we know in Acts that 72 turn into 120. Yeah. Right. And or even just before, you know, just moving into the book of Acts. But then we know even on the Great Commission, there are as many as 500 that are right. up on the mountain. But you see this progressiveness, but there is this idea that all along the way that he's calling people to their next step towards becoming a fully trained disciple. And I think that's, you know, probably, you know, just being mindful of really calling people to the next step and not letting them get comfortable in this, always in that stage of where they are, but how can we help them take that next step? Yeah. I think that is probably one of the greatest barriers.
You know, I've also learned that people tend to evaluate themselves much further down the pathway than probably what they really are.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Because they consider it based on time.
Yeah.
How long have I been a believer? How long have I been a Christian? Or how long have I been doing this religious activity, yeah. right? Therefore, that's what dictates where I am in the process. And that isn't necessarily always the case.
That's right. And it's also sometimes people think, well, I know a lot of Bible stuff. I've right. been in a lot of Bible studies, so I know a lot more.
Right.
But spiritual maturity is not measured by what you know. It's by how you live.
Yeah, it's your fruitfulness.
Yeah.
Jesus measures maturity by spiritual fruitfulness, right?
Yeah. In fact, that's a good transition to the next one. You're brilliant. You're good.
You set that right up on the tee for us right there. So this sixth core conviction is that multiplication is the measure for effective ministry.
Yeah. That Jesus was driven to multiply movement. You know, you think about it. What was Jesus really wanting to accomplish here? When you look at, and I'm talking about his ministry on the earth. I'm not talking about necessarily his death and resurrection, but just what was his goal with these guys? And it's very clear once you study the life of Jesus that, you know, his goal was to have these guys prepared and ready to multiply a movement. Mm. And so we see that happening when he says, go and wait in Jerusalem and you'll be empowered with the Holy Spirit and you'll be my witnesses to Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and the earth. I mean, that's what he had in mind, this explosive, growing, expanding movement of multiplication. If that's what Jesus wanted then don't you think that's what he wants now? Mm-hmm. He wants this growing, expanding work. And so this the multiplication then becomes the measure of what we're saying, you know, effective ministry. Now, when I say multiplication, there are lots of different ways that we see multiplication. There could be individual multiplication where I'm discipling another person and I should be doing that. You know, my plan is to do that until I'm stepping into heaven. Mm. But then there is group multiplication where your group can multiply into more groups. And then there's church multiplication where, you know, your church plants another church or starts another location or something like that where it's multiplying and growing. And then, of course, you can even have network where you have those churches work together to even grow more churches, mm-hmm. which is what we're engaged in as well. But all of this is just to bear fruitfulness and to multiply the kingdom of God. You know, Jesus said this. This is one of the key indicators you're my disciple, is that you bear much fruit.
Yeah, John 15:8.
Yeah, showing yourselves to be
my true disciple.
My disciple, and so
by bearing much fruit.
That's one of the ways that you know.
Right.
And so you know, Jesus saw that as a measure of fruitfulness of a disciple. Mm. And so we're not just coming on you and saying, "Well, this is what it should be." This is the reoccurring theme. I mean, when you look at Jesus, how Jesus deals with things that don't produce fruit, he has very harsh words for them.
Yep.
Barrenness and no fruit is never good in Jesus' mind. You know, fruitfulness is what it's all about. My son-in-law took me out to his backyard, and we've done a lot of remodel on his backyard. I'm not really good at that kind of thing, but I can sweat, okay? That's about it. I don't know what I'm doing, but we put up fences and we've done a lot of stuff like that. But he said, "Hey, why don't you come look at this?" And he pointed to his tree, and I hadn't recognized this, but this thing is a pear tree. Mm. And he's got pears just all up in there, you know, and some of them are starting to fall on the ground. And so we were thinking, like, how do you know when they're ripe? And anyway, but it, just the coolness of the fact that, hey, this tree is producing fruit. Mm. And there are other trees in the backyard that don't produce any fruit, but this one is producing fruit. They can multiply. That's got seeds inside every one of them. And I just thought, you know, Jesus is going to look at your life and he's going to, are you going to be a tree that doesn't produce fruit? Mm. Maybe has a lot of leaves and maybe looks really good, but no fruit, or you're going to be a fruitful tree. And that's the effective measure that Jesus is looking for in us individually and as a church.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so good. And it reminds me of John 4:34, where Jesus says to his disciples after they've been encountering, watching him interact with the woman at the well, right? The Samaritan woman. And he goes, and they're kind of complaining to him a little bit. You know, kind of, I'm sure, like, what in the world? And Jesus says, you don't understand the food I already have, because they've been out trying to get food, right? Yeah. He'd send them out to get some McDonald's down the way. But they come back, and he says, my food is to do the will and the work of the Father. Mm-hmm. And obviously, he accomplished the will of the Father when he died on the cross. He accomplished that. But he, in John 17:4, even before he dies, he says, this is to my Father's glory that I have completed the work that you have given me to do. And that is the work of multiplication. He had raised up a team that was capable to replicate what he had been doing over those last 3 years. And I just think, wow, that is the measure. The measure of how are we helping people to know Jesus, and then that next part of it is to complete that work of Jesus to become disciple makers who will change the world.
Yeah, you and I both know a man named Herman Reese, and Herman just passed away at the young age of 94, and this was a man that gave himself to fruit, bearing fruit. And he walked away from a very lucrative surgery. I mean, he was a surgeon, a surgical practice, to give himself full-time in ministry and led businessmen to Christ and discipled them. And they, in turn, did to others. And there are thousands of men whose lives are different because of him. And I just think, you know, when he stepped into heaven, Jesus didn't want to necessarily talk probably about his
dental practice.
His practice, yeah. Right? It was the fruit of his life that really matters. That this is the measure of effectiveness in ministry. And so keeping that in the forefront of your mind, if this is a core conviction, then it's going to drive you personally, but it will also help you to say, okay, where are we seeing fruit?
Yep.
And are we really working on that? Or are we just throwing events that draw big crowds?
Right. Yep. Really good. Well, this last one is that disciple-making churches must be planted. This is the last core conviction.
Yeah, and it's really kind of an outgrowth of the last one. You know, we said if multiplication is a measure of effective ministry, then part of that includes disciple-making churches. And we believe that Jesus had in mind disciple-making churches. I mean, after all, Jesus said, you know, he is building his church on the foundation of what Peter declared, that he is the Christ, the Son of the living God, and that the gates of Hades cannot prevail against the church, that the church will win and will prevail and will grow. And we certainly see that in the book of Acts. And so we believe that Jesus intended every church to be a disciple-making church, a prevailing church, a multiplying, growing, expanding church, and that this is the enterprise of the church and the local church. And so if that's the case, then we should be about planting churches that have that in mind. And of course, there are a lot of churches that do great things, you know, but are not necessarily focused on making disciples and multiplying. And so our what we believe is a core conviction of Jesus lived out in the book of Acts is that Jesus wanted disciple-making churches who would fulfill the Great Commission in their lifetime.
Yeah, ooh, I really love that. Yeah, so again, let's just real quick, let me make a real quick recap on these seven core convictions. You know, the first one is that Jesus' way is the best way. Second core conviction is that the Great Commission is about making disciples. Third core conviction is that the gospel centers on King Jesus. The fourth conviction is the Spirit dependence is vital. The fifth core conviction is that people grow best on a pathway. Number six is that the sixth core conviction is that multiplication is a measure of effective ministry. And this last one we just talked about, that disciple-making churches plant. Disciple-making churches must be planted from other disciple-making churches, right? So, yeah, so I these are so good because it just continues to be like a funnel. It just kind of, you have that philosophy of ministry and it kind of starts to funnel its way down into these core convictions, which then ultimately, and this is this last question I'm just going to ask you, how would these convictions, these this core framework, these core priorities really drive ministry outcomes?
Yeah, so as you have these, let's say you're planning for the year, you're evaluating ministries, then you would have this as kind of a grid to say, are we on course? Are we, where do we see multiplication happening? Where do we see, are we a part of planting disciple-making churches? Are we moving people down a pathway? Do we have a pathway articulated, and are we measuring them and seeing who all is moving down the pathway? I mean, in our church setting, we get very specific. We say we got to move people down the pathway and up the pipeline, which we haven't really talked about leadership pipeline in this podcast. We have in many in previous ones, but we get down to names, okay? Mm-hmm. What name? Who are the people you're going to move down the pathway? Who are you trying to move up the pipeline? Because we take that very seriously. You know, spirit dependence. What does your prayer life look like? How are you calling as a leadership team on the Lord in prayer? And then are we articulating the gospel? Are we getting the gospel out? Are we focused on making disciples? Can we look and see where we've been successful? How do we get better? You know, all of these are the things that you ask in an evaluative way to make sure that you're, and what will happen is, it happens for us all the time, is we look at this and go, oh man, we're doing pretty good here, but we really need to shore this one up, or we need to work on this one. And so that kind of gives you some direction. Okay, this year we're going to really focus on this piece. And so there's always going to be something that you're working on to get better at, but it keeps you focused on that. And then if a new opportunity comes, you go back to this and go, okay, is this in agreement and compliance? Is it still fitting with our core convictions? And, you know, if not, then we may not choose to do that because it's, you know, it's not really in line with what we're convicted about.
Yeah. What we're eat, drink, sleep, think about, right?
Right. And
so that's really good. So, hey, thanks for taking some time.
Yeah.
I think this conversation that we had around these seven core convictions was really good. And I think very important.
Mm-hmm.
Because really, again, that core conviction means I have driven a stake in the ground. I'm not going back. Even that idea of I'm burning down the ships, whatever, or you know, burning the bridge to get across the other side. I'm cutting it down, whatever it takes, right? Because I'm all in.
Yes.
And this is how we're going to really formulate doing ministry Jesus' way. So great. Thank you so much, Craig, for taking your time. And I just want to let you listeners know that you can download a free listening guide to this show. You can just simply go on there and download those show notes. Also, you can do that for episode one and for this episode as well, but I want to make you aware of that. And then there's also a coupon code for 20% off for a book that Pastor Craig just recently wrote called His Way. And the coupon code is His Way. And if you use that, you can get a 20% discount on that book. And it is a great book because it looks at several key events in the life of Jesus, helps you study, helps you distill and to think about what are the patterns and the practices that Jesus was using, but that were born out of this philosophy of ministry. And then you spent a lot of time towards the tail end of the book then kind of really going back through these seven core convictions. So great resource if you're looking to do a little bit more work on it. So again, thank you for taking the time to be with us, and we hope that this podcast has been incredibly helpful for you.
Thank you for listening to the Disciple Making Leader podcast, brought to you by Disciple First. We hope today's episode has been both helpful and challenging in your journey to becoming a disciple making leader. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to make sure you hear the next episode. And if you have a moment, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave a review and share this podcast with your friends. Until next time, keep making Jesus the model for your life and ministry.